You're back with Melissa Harris-Perry and The Takeaway from WNYC and PRX in collaboration with WGBH Radio in Boston.
Throughout Women's History Month, The Takeaway has been joining with the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University to bring you the stories of women leading locally. Now, I know we're not exactly in the month of March anymore, but there was just one more interview we had to bring to you. For this one, we're heading out to the West Coast.
My name is Holly J. Mitchell. I'm a member of the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors, and I represent the 2nd District.
Holly Mitchell is not only an LA County Supervisor, she's the chair of the board and part of the Fab Five. No, not the basketball team. For the first time in its 150-year history, the LA County Board of Supervisors is led by an all-woman board. I asked Supervisor Mitchell, for everyone who doesn't live in LA County, explain what a supervisor is, because y'all are serious.
Well, you know, it's the county level of government, I say, is the best kept secret, I think, in the country. Some parts of the country refer to supervisors as county commissioners. But, you know, the county level of government is really the safety net. That's where your public health, your Department of Mental Health, your public hospitals, for LA County, the sheriff, our, you know, our county jail, the county court system, those are all county agencies. But, you know, LA is the largest county in the country with approaching 11 million people with 5 supervisors. And so this board is arguably one of the most powerful elected bodies in the country because all of us represent north of 2 million constituents.
That's more than some senators represent in the U.S. Senate.
Well, we represent more people than all but 5 governors in this country.
That is stunning.
It really is. It is. And, you know, it's only 5, you know, unlike Congress or other elected bodies, that the body will grow based on population. When the LA County Charter was written, the charter said there will be 5. So as LA County's population has grown, the number of seats has not. And so that's how we come to be, the fact that we represent 2 million people each.
So I suppose it was pretty easy to get elected by something that is basically larger than a state, especially as a Black woman.
Yeah, that would be no. There, you know, the seats that we have term limits here in California. You can serve a 3-4-year term for a maximum of 12 years. It's very competitive because the seats don't come available, you know, very often. I'm the 2nd Black woman to serve since the county became a county. And my election last November of 2020 created the first all-female board of supervisors, which was pretty astonishing. For many, many years, the board was all male, all white male, I would say. The election of Gloria Molina is what brought the first woman to the board. And so it's been slow progress, but it's a very competitive seat. I ran against a very formidable candidate, a former speaker of the state legislature and LA City Council president. But it was a race that was based on, you know, the needs of Angelenos today. The 2nd District is one of the most diverse districts in the county. And unfortunately, as a result of COVID, we've also recognized that it's the district with, some would argue, the greatest need. We were hit the hardest by COVID. We have the lowest vaccination rate, the highest percentage of residents who are unhoused. And so there's a lot of work to be done in this district, and I'm proud, deeply proud, to represent it.
I know that as you point to some of the real challenges that that face the community that you represent, you've been doing work to disrupt poverty through guaranteed income program. Can you talk about that a bit?
Melissa, I'm so deeply excited about this opportunity. You know, being a poverty disruptor is what led me to electoral politics, quite frankly, when I first ran in 2008. And it's really the policy area and the program area I've spent my entire career. You know, frankly, my parents met as eligibility workers working for LA County in the late 50s. So, you know, one could argue I was born into this work, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, looking at these pilot programs across the country, right here in California, Former Mayor Michael Tubbs in Stockton, former Mayor Asia Brown in Compton, both launched programs that have been hugely successful. And the premise is, you know, we want to create a culture shift where we're no longer criminalizing poverty or, you know, blaming poor people for being poor, but really acknowledging what it takes economically to be able to take care of yourselves and your families, particularly here in the high cost county of LA. And so we are looking at the research done as a result of the Stockton and Compton programs. And we've launched what will be the longest guaranteed income pilot, 3 years. And my hope is that with this research, working with the partners at the University of Pennsylvania, we'll really figure out what that sweet spot is. You know, how long does it take for a single dad or a family or a senior to really have these additional resources to invest in themselves, to create an opportunity where they really can pull themselves out of poverty and we can end multi-generational poverty? Is it allowing them to start fund a micro business? Does it allow them to get a car that really works to allow you to drive a little further for the full-time job versus relying on public transportation to get to multiple part-time jobs? You know, is it the tutoring for your kids? You know, what is it that these additional resources can do for your family that will help break that cycle? The researchers at the University of Pennsylvania and some partners here at a local California-based institution of higher learning are very eager to really look at that systematically so we can begin to address, I think, some of the systemic causes to people finding themselves living in poverty.
You say that being a poverty disruptor was part of what led you, that's really your pathway into elected office. So tell me a little bit more about that pathway. Why make the decision to go into elective office rather than staying in kind of community-based work?
You know, I was running an amazing organization here in LA County, Crystal Stairs, a child development agency. We facilitated care to about 25,000 kids a day throughout South Los Angeles. And I was in Sacramento because the legislature was considering, and they ultimately did, cutting $1 billion out of the subsidized child care budget. Those were dollars that helped former CalWORKs recipients who were in school, helped, you know, grocery clerks, TSA agents, people whose number one budget item was their child care expense. And they couldn't go to work or go to school if they didn't have this support. And so I took a couple busloads of parents to Sacramento to help educate the policymakers about, you know, what that kind of cut would do to them and their families on the micro level, on the macro level, to understand the impact it would have on LA County's economy. The child care industry is one of the main driving industries in LA County. It ranks in some years like right behind the entertainment industry, ironically. And so I got there. There was no LA County representative on this budget subcommittee. Frankly, there were no women. And I, Melissa, just got angry. I realized that we didn't really have an audience, that they didn't make the connection about the valuable resource this was. And I understood in a deep, I think, kind of personal way, the impact that was going to have on families. You know, kids don't get a do-over. When they cut those childcare slots that year and we weren't able to really fund that same number of slots for another 10 years, you know, those 2 and 3 year olds didn't stay 2 and 3 years old waiting for the grown-ups to figure it out, right? Those children missed that opportunity for early enrichment. Those working parents missed that opportunity to have their children in high quality, affordable, early care and education settings. And so I literally sat in that budget hearing room and got mad enough to decide to run myself.
I love hearing you say that it was in part like an anger, right? A determination to make that change. Were there people in your life who this is one of the things we've been talking about through this series, were there people who said, you know what, you should run, that maybe you'd been ignoring, and then while you were sitting in that hearing room, you were like, you know what, actually, I should run? Or was this something that in some ways you had to do, even if there weren't other people suggesting that you should run?
Well, the primary naysayer was myself. I have to say that I had wonderful, amazing women throughout my life who had been saying it for years. my former first boss, then State Senator Diane Watson, who throughout her career went on to be a member of Congress and an ambassador. My current seatmate on the LA County Board of Supervisors, Sheila Kuehl, had said to me for many years, Holly, you should run, Holly, you should run. And the reality was, I'm a great number two. I was great staff, great support to others in that position. And I felt, you know, I can really get a lot done being a number two, doing the research, doing the background. When I went to run Crystal Stairs, running the direct programs, it wasn't until that moment that I think I fully embraced and understood that I had kind of the ordinary life experience, the perspective of running programs. I had proximity to families and childcare providers, that I could take that experience and their voice with me to Sacramento and attempt to change programs from the inside out. When I heard those policymakers and their rationale for cutting the $1 billion, I felt deeply that there was just a missing voice and a missing perspective. And I knew I had that. Now, I was the naysayer because I'm a single adoptive parent. My son at the time was 8. You know, I frankly, to be completely transparent and honest, had to take a pay cut from running this agency to go into the legislature. In California, you're term limited. There's no pension. So I'm a working class, middle-aged Black woman trying to raise a son. I had to also think about the practicality for my own life of going into public service. The other issue was, I have to tell you, and it's interesting, I wear my hair natural. I'm locked. So we began to look nationwide. I said, I need to find a woman, single, with a school-age child, kind of who's done this. I was looking for a role model. And literally called Emily's List, called the Center for the American Woman in Politics. I was like, help me find someone. And at that time, we couldn't. Well, Melissa, I got mad again because I thought, you know, this is like a systematic approach to keeping someone like me out. If I can't figure out how to make it work, no one else will. You know, people have their opinions about term limits, but the California Term Limits Initiative, like I said, created this salary cap and ended our pension. How many women or people of working class means can carve out 12 years of their life where you don't earn a pension? So again, I got pissed and decided I have to figure out how to navigate this because in all good conscience, I can't encourage other women to run for office if I'm not able to figure this out and do it myself.
And now, of course, the next middle-aged, single mama, natural hair-wearing, extraordinary woman who is looking for a model has one. She has you.
She does. And that makes me deeply, deeply proud.
I think of Toni Morrison saying that she wrote because she needed to write the book that she wanted to read. And it sounds to me a bit like you ran for office because you needed the representative who you are.
And I realized that my truth was the same truth of so many other women and working families. And it was literally sitting in that budget hearing when I heard the conversation around cutting that child care budget that I understood that I too had a story to tell. And that while I wasn't naive enough to think that I could have prevented that from happening, but I also knew that I wanted to be in that space that when the economy turned around and California, you know, wasn't, you know, in the red, that I wanted to be able to rebuild those systems and those programs in a way that was strategic and smart and family centered. And that's what I spent my 10 years in the California legislature doing.
As you talk about the locks, and I have two locked daughters, of course, I've been wearing braids forever. One of the things that you did while you were in the legislature was to help pass the Crown Act, which has now been passed at the federal level. And of course, we just saw that at the core of this moment at the Oscars with Will Smith and Chris Rock is actually a story about a Black woman and her hair. Talk to us about the Crown Act and why it matters.
Well, you know, Melissa, I carried the Crown Act here in California. I introduced the bill, Senate Bill 188, and California was the first state to pass the Crown Act. So we jump-started this, the Crown Act movement here in partnership with the members of the Crown Coalition. And it has taken off like wildfire, and it's amazing. And, you know, in 1 week's time, just speaking very personally, to see the Crown Act be introduced again and passed off the floor, to hear those Black women, members of the House of Representatives, tell their own stories and why it was so important, to see a locked Black woman, a legal scholar of historic measure, be presented in the Judiciary Committee and attacked so viciously. And to then again, and later that same week, see a Black woman humiliated. Frankly, I think that's what the joke was, humiliation. It just, for me, reminded me that our hair is political. Our hair is personal. We are expected to stand and fight and defend our right to wear our hair as we choose. And for me, the Crown Act is about a culture shift. You know, we changed the law. The law is a backstop. It's a safety measure to give one the right to sue and the right to defend themselves. But my ultimate goal and the goal of the Crown Coalition is for people to not have to rely on the law, for us to affect a culture shift, because Black women are the only group of women, the only group of people who have been told your hair isn't good enough for the workplace or school or the Oscars. And so that's what the Crown Act is about. This is a movement. I am humbled beyond measure to play a small role in it. But the issue is not going away. It is a fundamental issue of discrimination. It's a fundamental issue of we will be seen how we choose to present ourselves in whatever setting we're in, be it the U.S. Supreme Court, be it the entertainment industry, be it the Board of Supervisors.
Your conversation, our conversation today, is part of this series that we've done throughout the month of March, Women Leading Locally. When I say to you, women leading locally, what does that mean to you?
It means women like Lillian Mosley and Sweet Alice Harris here in LA County, who have led policymakers for decades in understanding the basic core needs and rights of community. It means women on school boards. It means Karen Bass, a Black woman running for mayor in the city of Los Angeles, who in every conversation is bringing life and meaning to what government must do to house our unhoused family, friends, and neighbors. It means women in leadership, Dr. Elaine Batchelor at Martin Luther King Community Hospital, leading the fight around health disparity. You know, it means women in labor. It means, you know, we can define local any number of ways, but it means women, I think, at the community, at the ground level, who are clear about why we do what we do every day and fighting for the rights and the needs and bringing services to the sisters who look like us, who are relying on us to give voice to both their pain, their needs, and their successes.
Los Angeles County Supervisor Holly Mitchell, thank you for joining us.
It has been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
So we really hope you've enjoyed our Women's History Month series, Women Leading Locally. And I want to extend our deepest thanks to our partners at the Center for American Women in Politics, Debbie Walsh, Kelly Dittmar, Kira Sundman-Matsu, Daniel DeSimone, and everyone behind the scenes who contributed to our work during this past month. So what did we learn? Debbie Walsh, director of the Center for American Women in Politics, definitely underscored the importance of data when it comes to women running for office.
The data really helps define what the problem is and what the challenge is, right? If you don't know how many women are serving, if you don't know how many women are running, you can't really figure out what are the solutions to the problem.
And we heard about the importance of sisterhood from Philadelphia Council Members at Large, Helen Gim and Kendra Brooks.
Our sisterhood is one thing, but what does it mean to really bring power to all women elected officials in the city? And it's part of us just coming together, getting the work done, having the hard conversations, and creating the city that we all want to see. And I think that's what women leading locally means.
You know, one of the things that has been incredibly powerful is that women lead all the time, that we are leading on issues that have been devalued and marginalized in the overwhelmingly patriarchal, money-driven political sphere.
Now, if you missed our Facebook Live earlier this week, political science professor and senior scholar at the Center for American Women in Politics, Kira Senben-Matsu, spoke about the significance of name recognition and money for women running for office.
We have been running a project at the center in collaboration with Open Secrets about money in politics, and we've been looking at how women are doing in state politics across the country. And we've been looking at women's role as donors as well. And one of the things that we find is that women often feel it's harder for them to raise money. They get there, but the path might be more difficult.
And let's be clear, there is no lack of ambition when it comes to the women we've spoken to for this series. Let's take a look at Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome of Baton Rouge, who's been in elected office for 30 years. But when she ran for mayor, let's just say she got quite a surprise.
I never will forget when I ran for mayor, a woman, a senior, who normally supported me, when she found out I was running for mayor, she said, you know, I've loved you as my senator, but I just don't want you to run for mayor. I don't want, and this is in the 21st century. She said, I don't want a woman to be my mayor. And I was shocked, but that was very revelatory. Because I think that there are people who embrace that mindset.
Well, that's okay, because apparently people want Mayor President Broome to now run for another office.
My plan is to run for re-election in 2024. I would be remiss and less than transparent if I did not say that I have been encouraged to run for statewide office. In fact, there was a statewide poll that came out yesterday, and the question was posed, if you were to vote for governor today, who would you vote for? The person who came out first was one of our current U.S. Senators, John Kennedy. Believe it or not, I came in second.
Oh, we believe it, Mayor President Broome, and wish you well, whatever your path leads to next. So we've learned that while there are many challenges for women leading locally, communities are better with women in leadership positions. And if you want to listen back to any of our Women Leading Locally conversations, just head on over to thetakeaway.org.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.